Yeah, it was that kind of night last night in Big D as the Cowboys ran away from the Colts in the fourth quarter. And there's some highlights from around the league, including some injury news specifically on Jimmy G. Third time in his career, he's been knocked out for the season with injury. This time it's a broken foot surgery, and he is done for the year. Huge blow for the San Francisco 49ers. Welcome back to the show, everybody. 9:18 on this Monday morning to talk some football. We welcome, as we do each and every Monday, our friend Duke Ellingson on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Duke?
Very well, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Hey, before we talk NFL, wanted to get your reaction to the news that Bob Dice is now the full-time head coach of the Ottawa Redblacks. It was down to three, including the defensive coordinators in both Hamilton and Toronto, and then the known quantity, or the more known quantity here in Ottawa, in Bob Dice. Maybe A, your reaction, and B, are you surprised at the end of the day that that's the direction the Redblacks went?
You know what? No, not really, and I'm very happy for Bob Dice. One thing I think we can all agree on in sports organizations is if you can have continuity, even when changes have to be made, like a firing, as we saw last year, if you can find ways to promote from within and sort of bring in guys or keep guys that know the culture, the expectations, know the players, and obviously if the person's a competent and a good choice for the organization in the new role, I think you try to do that. And I think that's what Sean Burke did. I think his trust in Bob Dice from the time that he's known and here, and obviously the conversations that they've had, and even some feedback from players, I'm sure, all entered into it. So I think it's an exciting development for the organization, and I really like the fact that right away they kind of, the delineation of labor where he was not going to be a coordinator. I know he's going to have hands, obviously, in all parts of the game, but I think it was a really important piece that they recognize and understand and agree that he was going to be the head coach and give up all coordination responsibilities. And I think that was, to me, the downfall of Paul Appelbaum.
Everybody talks, Duke, about how Bob Dice connects on a personal level with not just players but staff, with everybody that he comes across. Just in your time in playing in the league, I mean, how important it seems to me that X's and O's would always seem to kind of trump all, like, right? Are you of such a mind that you can outsmart your opponents? But we kind of forget about the human connection part of that. How important is that?
It's huge. It absolutely is huge. And it's interesting, a lot of fronts. The head coach sometimes can be a little bit distanced from the players, if you think about the day-to-day there in a football week where the coordinators and the position coaches spend all of the time with the players in meetings and really interacting with them, and the head coach is kind of overseeing from a higher level, and sometimes it's hard, to have that connection. So oftentimes the guys that have spent time as a coordinator really build that bridge with the players, and it matters. And now the trick is, can you continue to have that kind of impact and that kind of sort of mentorship as a head coach? It's not that easy, but absolutely, I think the best coaches, in my mind, the best coaches are leaders of men. The X's and O's are part of the equation for sure, but that's why you have coordinators. That's why you hire good people underneath you and around you, and your job is to get everybody, pointing in the right direction, and then certainly on game day, the X and O part is really about game management, and I think that's, again, where I think Bob Dice is going to have some unique challenges because it'll be his first time doing it, but I'm excited for him and excited for the organization.
In a lot of ways, Duke, is a football team set up the same as the military? You got your general, then you got your people, mm-hmm. lieutenants under, and filters down to the soldiers.
100%, and all of the direction, the philosophy, all of that comes from the top, and you're right, but the general doesn't get to touch that level as often as the lieutenants do. And so, again, that's why you build. And I think this is what we now have. We have a general manager who's been hired. He's now had a chance to, clean the slate, hire his own coach, and the head coach now is going to hire his coordinators. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it works best. And I think some of the names that we've heard already, Kahari Jones, perhaps Baron Miles, I think you've got, the building blocks for a pretty impressive coaching staff.
We do know that Kahari Jones has been hired as offensive coordinator. Obviously had some head coaching responsibility in Montreal, but has been an offensive coordinator both in Montreal and BC for quite a while. Just in watching him as he was in those two CFL cities, do you have a kind of a feel for Kahari Jones as an offensive coordinator?
You know, when he was a player, for those that may remember in the time that he spent in the CFL in Winnipeg, won a MVP during his time there, took the Bombers to a Grey Cup, which they didn't win. But he was, you know, an aggressive quarterback in terms of liking to get the ball down the field. He had some good weapons in the day with Milt Stegall and others. But I think he's an aggressive kind of offensive coordinator. He understands what it takes to be successful, certainly at the quarterback position. And I think we're going to see an aggressive approach to offense, which will be a welcome change of pace here.
All right, we're talking football with Duke Ellington. All right, let's turn our attention to the NFL. And I think the biggest news from the day yesterday, Duke, is the 49ers, who have Super Bowl aspirations, are now looking for their third quarterback this year. Trey Lance started. He didn't even get out of training camp. Jimmy G's come in, and now he is done for the year. I guess the initial question is, can the San Francisco 49ers, specifically that defense and the playmakers, overcome having a seventh-round rookie as their quarterback and do some damage in the playoffs and going forward?
Well, I think if you're a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles or the Dallas Cowboys or any of the other NFC contenders, you're probably a little happier this morning, because that San Francisco team with a veteran quarterback was going to be a real tough out this year. Can they overcome that? I think it's asking an awful lot. You know, certainly the blueprint of having a top-tier defense, which San Francisco does, and having not just playmakers, but an ability to run the ball in a myriad of ways as San Francisco does. I think, obviously, the acquisition of Christian McCaffrey has been huge for them. But still, you're asking, as you said, a seventh-round kid who has really not played yet in this league to now lead his team, likely into some pretty hostile environments in the playoffs. So I think they're going to be able to insulate him maybe more than some teams would be able to. But I just think it's asking an awful lot.
Do you think they go out and sign somebody that's retired, Duke?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to find somebody. I've heard the name Josh Johnson. And, I mean, right now, you know, the trade deadline's passed. There's only guys that are either, you know, not playing or free agents for a reason. So the likelihood of you bringing anybody that can have any kind of impact at this point to learn the offense and everything else is very, very slim. They're going to have to find somebody just to bring in terms of available bodies, but right now I think the kids, he's been in the system obviously since the offseason through training camp, every meeting, every day. So he gives them, I think, the best chance to run the offense as it's laid out today.
Well, since Patrick Mahomes entered the scene in Kansas City along with Andy Reid, they have been the model franchise in the league, and they have won a lot of games, except against the Cincinnati Bengals, especially in the last 12 months. What is it about the Bengals, and specifically I think about the way they defend, that allows them to, relatively speaking, shut down Patrick Mahomes?
You know, it's a very good question. I mean, everybody is trying the same things against Kansas City with varying degrees of success. And I was thinking about that this morning, because if you go back to that first regular season game last year, I think it was a really wild game. In fact, it might have even gone to overtime, but it was a high-scoring game, and Cincinnati just made more plays at the end of the game. The playoff game, I think we all remember that Kansas City kind of had that game under control, and then near the end, with a couple of interceptions and some suspect play calling, they allowed the Bengals back in, and of course the Bengals won it in overtime. So I'm not sure that necessarily Cincinnati has them completely figured out, but matchup wise offensively, I think where Cincinnati has a huge advantage is the ability to have three really gifted wide receivers. Not a lot of teams can roll out those three guys, and Kansas City's Achilles heel has always been in the secondary, and I think we saw that a little bit yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, they held Mahomes to kind of, under 300 yards, and they just didn't let the game get away. So they've obviously got a feel for how to defend them, but they've also had some breaks, some of them self-made, some of them, Kansas City side is kind of self-inflicted.
Yeah, it felt like in the second half Mahomes was thrown off his back foot a lot, so I guess that's pressure. But a guy like Joe Burrow, is it the talent that it impresses you? Is it the mental and physical toughness, or just all of the above? Because it has just been incredible what he's done since he came in, and not phased at all facing Patrick Mahomes.
No, and it's a good point. It's not just about, because he's not the most physically gifted guy that's come out of college in the last 4 or 5 years. He's not the biggest. He doesn't have the strongest arm. But But boy, he reminds me a lot of a Joe Montana, and that's your point about sort of the mental side, the emotional side. He just seems to rise in the big moments. He doesn't get flustered. It seems in the biggest moments he plays his best, and he just doesn't ever seem to get flustered, whether it's, you know, a lot of pressure coming his way or getting down in a game or even throwing a couple interceptions early. He just seems to have that ability to never blink, and I think that's what makes him pretty special.
Yeah, I think the other part of it is, and just watching that game yesterday, Duke, is, yeah, and as a coach, you hold your breath every single time, but if he has to pull it, if he has to tuck it and run, you know, he's more than willing to do it, and he's more than willing to take his fair share of shots to try to get a first down. And again, I that's not a long-term recipe for success, but I got to think, as a teammate, and especially an offensive teammate, watching your quarterback do that, I got to think that's pretty inspirational.
Yeah, there's two things I think that teammates love about their quarterback. One is exactly what you just said, willing to put your body on the line as a runner, especially, you know, and you can't do it, as you said, you can't do it every time. You can't do it for 16 weeks in the NFL and expect to survive. But when you really need it and it's a big-time play, you're willing to do that. The other thing is standing in the pocket and taking hits to make throws. Those are the two things that really gain quarterbacks respect. And, you know, Burrow sometimes has been criticized, I think, for standing in the pocket too long, taking a lot of hits, not wanting to throw the ball away or make a bad decision. And, you know, while that's great, you know, his teammates love it, he's got to be careful about that, because we saw what happened to him a couple of years ago with the knee injury.
Are you feeling like JR's Eagles are the real deal?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I saw a stat this morning that I thought was pretty cool, that the Eagles last week, as you guys remember, rushed for over 350 yards, and yesterday they passed for over 350 yards. And it's the first time, I believe, in almost NFL history that a team has done that in back-to-back weeks in any order. So to be able to run it like that when you have an opportunity or when the matchups favor you, and then yesterday knowing that they weren't going to be able to do that against Tennessee and let Jalen Hurts win it in the air, to throw for 350 yards is pretty impressive. So, yeah, they're humming on all cylinders. If they can stay healthy right now, it's really, you know, tough to see anybody that can go into Philadelphia anyways and beat that team.
Yeah, that'll be the I think I always think home field is huge in football, right, in playoff football. Mm-hmm. But, well, yeah, you know, Cincinnati went into KC and won the AFC Championship game last year, so we'll wait and see on that. And A.J. Brown has just been everything they hope for and more. That second touchdown catch,
yeah,
where he's essentially, I mean, he is well covered on that, and he kind of lets the ball kind of falls onto the defensive back's shoulder pad, and he just says, I got strong hands here, I'll take that, thank you very much. Like, you could not have covered him any better, and he made a touchdown catch on that. Like, there's very few guys that can make that play.
Oh, he's been unbelievable, you're right. And, I mean, I'm sure he had a whole lot of fun doing it yesterday against his old team. But, you know, the league now has sort of five or six of those receivers who literally you can just throw it to them, and to your point, they're covered. It's one-on-one coverage, but they're covered. There isn't, you know, he hasn't got any separation. But these guys with their hands, with their jumping ability, with their sheer strength and size, seem to come down with the ball more often than not. Yeah, he's just been, obviously to me, he has been the key signing in the offseason of any of the guys that have moved teams.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. We won't ask you to break down Saints-Bucks. Wish it well. It's an important game just for, you know, the NFC South, because somebody has to make the playoffs. But these are Duke two not very good football teams meeting tonight, Monday Night Football.
No, you're right, and I think the Bucks will probably find a way, but it's going to be ugly.
Right, there you go. All right, we'll have it for you. Good reason to listen to the game tonight. Duke, always appreciate the time and the insight, my friend. We'll chat again next week.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Duke Ellingson joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators.
You're right. Starting a franchise right now, J.R. Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, and I'll even, I guess, throw in Mr. Hurts. Or is he not really into that group? But who would you start a team with?
I would still take Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he's the one guy of those four, and if you want to throw somebody else in who's actually done it, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I mean, they're all really good choice, and there's a handful of other guys too. I mean, Justin Herbert, unfortunately, appears to be on a star-crossed team that can't stay healthy. But you know, there's two or three other quarterbacks,
yeah,
that are really, really good.
Yeah, I just have such an appreciation. I just don't think anything in sports is as difficult, holds as much responsibility as being a quarterback. When you see these young guys come in and play at the level that they do, and in the case of even Josh Allen to some extent, but in the, yep, case of Hurts, to really, I'll put two in that, like, to overcome all the negativity from when you're drafted that you're no good. Always impressed with that.
Yeah. All right. We'll have the Saints-Bucks for you tonight. 7:30 pregame. 8:15 will be the kickoff. 9:30. Don't forget we got some soccer coming up top of the hour. Between now and then, more on the Sens as they get set to hit the ice again for practice this morning. Get you an update on Artem Zub. Looks like it could be an injury is going to keep him out for some time. So an update on that for you. And as well, we have some of, well, not on some, pretty much all of the best female hockey players in the world are coming to Ottawa this weekend to play, and we'll give you a chance to win some tickets to that coming up right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Not very deep to begin with, so I guess for the here and now, it's Zaitsev in and Holden in, because they've been, well, Zaitsev hasn't even been here, and Holden's been in and out of the lineup, but I guess what we saw Saturday, Simmer, is what we're going to see for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, absolutely, and you hope with the goaltending tandem, healthy and playing well, JR, yeah, you're going to see Zaitsev and Shabbat, Hamonic and Sanderson, and Brännström and Holden. I'm assuming Larson would end up coming up as the extra, and that's what it is right now, so it's going to be a crucial time, and I do believe as playing team defense, say, it's critical for any team, but with that power play and the goaltending, it'll be, yeah, it's going to be everybody having to kind of buckle up here as you get into a real tough stretch, and more importantly, hitting the road against a team like Dallas come Thursday.
Now, JBD had the high ankle sprain, but that was at the start of just before they went out west, right, which would be two weeks, and they said that was a four-week injury, so, you know, just trying to, thinking ahead of other options. He obviously, if the time frames are right, is not an option at this point. You mentioned Larson coming up, and he would be the in case of emergency break glass guy.
Yeah.
You know, Thompson we saw for a little bit on the Western trip. You know, had some moments, but also had some moments where you go, probably not quite ready for prime time. So I guess if you're bringing somebody up to be essentially the spare defenseman, I guess arguably a guy that, you know, you don't want to have to play in terms of a guy like Larson is probably the right choice.
Yeah, you're always trying to balance it, Jared, at the same time. And when JBD comes back, would the coach, based on the six right now, want to put him in coming off of a high ankle sprain? Probably not. You want him and Thompson playing, Hetherington. Now they have a million injuries in Belleville, which I have not updated recently. So you're always trying to balance of calling people up, wanting to have a bit of stability in Belleville and trying to win hockey games. And this is kind of what you hit in a lot of National Hockey League cities now as you get to the first week of December and the injury list. But I do, it's an interesting, it's not just Belleville related. It's one of the things I've always thought, having been a GM in the American Hockey League, JR, is that I still think they play too many games at that level. And I'm not saying that's why Belleville's banged up, but I just don't really understand. It should be, to me, a little more of a college mentality as far as games versus practice and versus training, because just feels like over the years there's been a lot of athletes that can't get her done.
Yeah,
well, there's too many.
Yeah, Belleville had 3-3 this weekend, which is rare. They have gotten away from doing that at the American Hockey League level. They don't have their teams, by and large, play three games in 3 days, but Belleville just went through that, as you mentioned, and I don't think they're alone in this. I haven't gone through it, but there's just a ton of injuries in Belleville. I do agree with you, you know, in terms of what is the right thing to do. Mm. But the American Hockey League is a business at the end of the day, too, right? And you know what? They don't sell practices and sell tickets. They don't sell tickets to practices.
Yeah.
They sell tickets to games.
No, I understand. But it's also quite interesting now, though, is that all of the teams are owned by the parent club. Where back in the day, you had basically an agreement. We had an agreement with the Portland Pirates ownership, and they'd pay us a little over $1 million to basically take our players and coaches and everything else. Now, when you do own that, Jerry, I do look kind of big picture on research and development, and just also a feeling, and Ridly Gregg is somebody we've talked about a lot, there are more teenagers going in the league, either out of college or Europe, just for those guys transitioning into the first-year pros. It's just a lot to ask, and like I say, it's been a discussion around the league for a long, long time. You know, what is the perfect amount of practice and everything else, and the bottom line of what you might lose a little bit, because it's most American League teams outside of Hershey and Rochester aren't generating these crazy crowds. Is it still worth the dollars versus development?
All right, some texts that have come in throughout the morning. Robbie writes, regarding the Sens, signs of life from this very young team. There'll still be some rough spots, I'm sure, but boy, they sure are fun to watch. That's from Robbie in CP. You're at, I mean, again, the place was buzzing based on Tkachuk's game and the overtime win on Friday, on Saturday, for sure. But there are times, and there have been some games, especially some home games, which have, quite frankly, haven't been that entertaining. But then you are treated to games like Saturday, like the Boston home opener, like a handful of others this season, where you are reminded that there is some really good young talent.
Well,
on this team.
Yeah, and you're also going through kind of a checklist here, and this is even from a couple of years ago in discussing Colin White. The big dilemmas for this franchise to keep forward progress are going to be Zub and DeBrincat. How do you handle that? And even though Jake Batherson's had, you know, in and out as far as consistency, we know he's a good player. We know Norris, when he's healthy, is a good player. Giroux has come in and been terrific. Stützle and Tkachuk have gone next level. Shabbat settled back in. Sanderson has come as advertised. So if I go through a checklist of what do I need to have, you know, a good team for years to come, well, almost everything's hitting on all cylinders. What you unfortunately don't have, and those two big issues with DeBrincat and Zub are to me, major concerns about forward progress. But a lot of the stuff that you're searching for most times when you're trying to rebuild a hockey team, to summarize this, whoever's buying this thing is going to get one hell of a core. And I'm not going to go Quebec Nordiques when they move to Colorado, but this would not be a bad time to be buying an ice hockey team if you buy the one here in Ottawa.
I saw that someone tweeted at you hey, Ryan Reynolds, check it out. But then you said, no, Ryan's aware of what's going on.
He does the depth chart and everything. Hey, I don't think it was his team. I just saw where a Canadian soccer player signed over in the EPL. Obviously not Wrexham, but
he's at the championship level. So he's in the sort of the second tier.
Okay,
but, you know,
okay,
still good, right? No. Excellent.
Yeah, but you have some fun with it. But is that why somebody's buying the Ottawa Senators? No, but I'll tell you what, it doesn't hurt. And as I said, do you think of that transition to that franchise, even to some extent when Minnesota went to Dallas, JR. I always thought to myself, these American cities, they don't know what stinky hockey's like, especially Colorado. You think, oh, man, this hockey team just showed up, and I got Forsberg, and I got Sakic, and hey, do you know what I mean?
They're going to win 2 Stanley Cups in 6 years. This is what it's always like, right?
Like, I know they left Quebec, but why don't they call back to the province and get a goalie and bring in Patrick Waugh? What is happening right now, and Ryan Reynolds' angle, the Ottawa Senators, and this is the neat part. I was saying to Creech, and I'm sure Hammer sees the same thing, JR, I swear that the demographic of who's at these hockey games has just changed overnight. And the amount of kids, and I say kids, people in their 20s or 30s, walking in with Tkachuk, Stützle, and Norris jerseys appears to be the one. But the energy is something different. And when the Ottawa Senators with Ryan Reynolds, a new owner, a new building, for them to all of a sudden become cool, like I say, it's right. I don't know if this was all planned, but it's a different bunch of people that are going to have a lot of fun. And it is amazing how all those poor people that bought the Carlson and Stone jerseys and everything else, like, it's just, you don't even see them anymore.
Okay, so my kid, who was lucky enough to be at the Sharks game, had a blast. He was also at the home opener. He's also been to a lot of the lesser-known home games this season. He's got himself a Stützle.
Mm-hmm.
He has a Tkachuk. He has a DeBrincat.
Jerseys.
Holy moly.
Because he's just loving these.
Is he dealing, or not, he is working on the side, like
working.
He has a job. Okay.
This man's making some cash here. So
awesome.
He's saving up.
Apparently
his
he's spending it all too.
Yeah. He is. Half has got to go into savings, tax-free savings account.
Yeah.
So now he's saving up the tip money he was deciding what's the next one he's going to go with, Giroux, but he's landed on Jake Sanderson.
Oh.
Jake Sanderson will be the next jersey.
Well, that's just smart thinking. With all due respect to Claude Giroux, I mean, that's a long-term investment.
Yes.
Right? Sanderson is going to be here for the foreseeable future, and Giroux as well. He's here for 3 years, but smart move. Still not loving 85, but I'm willing to look past that.
That's the only thing that you're kind of worried about. He's got the Pinto and like 57. Like, I just hope he doesn't change his number on you.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't, right? That's going to be good.
No. Listen, he chose 85. Of his own, he's not changing.
Sanderson isn't, but what about Pinto? What was he? Was he 28?
He was 57, then 12, and now he's back to 57. I think he's waiting for 22 to free up.
22, okay.
Yeah. Which, well, we'll see on that. All right,
please
949.
Don't change.
Do we have a winner of our tickets?
We do. Manny Melios.
Congratulations, Manny! You're off to see some great women's hockey happening this weekend. The PWHPA All-Star Weekend happening here in Ottawa at Canadian Tire Center. And we'll have a pair of tickets to give away. The best women's hockey players in the world are descending on Ottawa this weekend. You can pick up tickets through Ticketmaster.ca. All right, 9:49. We're going to take a break and back with the final segment before we make way for some World Cup soccer. Japan-Croatia coming up at 10. Don't forget, in the box at noon today, another soccer game at 2. And then the drive starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon, all straight ahead here on TSN 1200.
The Mac 954 final segment. A couple more texts come in at 12-1200. Let's see here. Patty writes, shout out to Simmer and Creature for letting the boys from Russell into the TSN 1200 suite for a photo on Saturday. Simmer.
Oh, absolutely. And I say to anybody on a Saturday night and you want to slide by, there's no TSN TV, so it makes a beautiful Christmas photo and Christmas gift for everybody. And I also have a disclaimer, and that doesn't mean I have to be in it, and I mean that sincerely, but that set is so cool, and yeah, boys slid around. What nobody could ever figure out is, and I guess this is by design, Jerry, you've been out there, they all think that that little kind of cubby hole on the right-hand side is the door. Everybody tries to lift that up. Nobody knows how you get to the set, which is kind of interesting, so... credit to the Russell boys. Now, a little bit of a critique as well. When they did come around to the door, it took the one fella quite a bit of time to figure out how to open the door.
Mm.
So I don't know if he'd had a couple of pops and, you know, you got the little pull button there, but it was great to see the boys.
We're not here to judge.
No, exactly.
Ciabatta Buns texts in and says, two improvements I'd noticed with DJ's coaching. One, he's not constantly juggling the lines anymore, so they're starting to get some chemistry. And two, he has the defenseman shooting the puck now, which they weren't doing at all during the losing stretch. That's from Ciabatta Buns.
Yeah, and boy, I'll tell you what. First of all, fun to watch Shabbat playing. And as I said, Jerry, he had played a total of 60 minutes Wednesday and Friday. And that power play stepped on the ice, and it was just something different. And as you said, I'd love to kind of really get to the bottom of the San Jose PK numbers. But whatever it was, it looked like the Russian Five, and they were zipping it around. And, you know, it was really fun. And again, you also think about Friday. They started off with that terrible 4-minute power play with one shot on goal. Well,
yeah.
Not the case on Saturday night. Everybody was dancing.
Yeah. Now, with the Zub injury, we'll see. I mean, that, you know, again, they played two good games on the weekend.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. But this is a team that is already stretched due to a lack of depth, both on the back end and even up front as far as production goes. And taking Zub out, one of your frontline guys, one of your frontline defensemen, that is, if it is for 2 or 3 weeks, that's going to be... That's a tough one to overcome. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it really is. You finally got some stability. You hope the carryover is that the Zaitsev continue to be decent, and at the same time, Shabbat elevates, and I think even with Zub in there, JR, the formula for winning in December is you got a couple of goaltenders that have hit their groove, and Forsberg just feel like he fed off Talbot playing well on Friday night. Hopson is outstanding in the second and third period, and... if that power play can stay at that level that we saw on Saturday night, that's going to go a long ways to helping you win some ice hockey.
Now, the question is going to be, so they have games, they've got games on alternating days now going out. They've just finished their first back-to-back, and they don't have another one now for a couple of weeks. As far as the goaltending rotation goes, I think they will go back to Talbot on tomorrow night, even though Forsberg played well. But are we now into a win as you stay in, or do you think that Talbot is now... sort of taken over the number one role, and until he stumbles, maybe he's got the net for a while.
I don't have an answer for you. The way I would play it out is I probably would alternate, but who won against L.A.? Was Talbot in L.A., the overtime game?
Yeah, Forsberg is
hurt.
So
I would play him on that one. But when it comes to Dallas, yeah, it'll be interesting, Jared. You could talk me into just about anything. I'm pretty confident in both of them right now, but it would also be strange if Talbot plays Tuesday, and then you go and face one of the best teams in the NHL. I would assume you go back with him, right?
Might all depend on how he does tomorrow against LA.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If they end up winning,
right?
You know, it seems strange that you go in against Dallas, but I think they're just co-number ones. And as you said, whoever gets rolling, and they'll need both of them with this busy schedule.
Sens are back on the practice ice at 10:30 this morning when we rejoin you next after World Cup Soccer. It'll be in the box. Lever Sage, Kenny Walls give you the update on the Artem Zub injury. Presumably, we'll know after the coach speaks after practice today on the extent of that injury, but that is the plan. So stand by. Japan, Croatia is coming up. Then it is in the box with Lever Sage, Kenny Walls at noon or after overtime, which we could potentially see. Haven't seen that yet. Then it's Brazil, South Korea coming up at 2, and then the drive with Lee and Matty Vowles this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Monday Night Football for you tonight. It's the Saints and the Bucks, and we're back tomorrow morning. Have a great day with TSN 1200.